Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth. Where are we going today?
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Sarah. Well, we're not going much farther than my little cottage, figuratively, we'll be sitting here. But for the conversation today, I'm thinking a lot about school, which is still difficult to wrap my head around because Labor Day is still weeks away, and I am still caught in that old way of doing school, which is we don't do anything until after Labor Day. But the pictures of first day of classes are popping up everywhere, which is surprising. One of my friend's son is starting his senior year of high school in Hawaii. And I sent her a text and said, what does the senior look like? And she said, we are killing it here in Hawaii. And he's back on campus. Hallelujah. So she was really happy. And he does go to a private school. So they've done, you know, they have a lot more control over the social distancing, how that looks. Another friend sent his daughter back to school on the East Coast. She goes to Vassar. And Vassar's 2,500 students have the option of being on campus or not. And the vast majority of them have chosen to go back to school, to be on campus. And it's rigorous, the testing that they've done before the kids come back to school. They have to isolate, they're testing them on campus, and the professors all have an opportunity or an option to choose whether to be on campus or to do online. As we've seen a lot of photos of the Southeast, the South and the Southeast, where kids are back in school together, and we've seen an increase by 90% of children being diagnosed or testing positive for COVID, which is a bit alarming. My daughter, Kelly, left 2 weeks ago to drive her U-Haul van across the country to Chicago. And I have to say, Sarah, I had so many mixed feelings because in one way, you know, she's 23, almost 24. She's ready to do her life. Law school is her quest. And she did a great job driving across the country and stayed away from people and got there safely. And she's been quarantined in her little apartment in Chicago. And this week started orientation at law school. And so they're doing mostly online at this point. But the students themselves have met in social pods at picnics or out in the park to get to know each other. So she's created kind of her distanced community already since she's been back there. And again, there's part of me that wants to just cover her with a blanket and hold her at home until things get better. But then another part of me feels like she has to be able to take responsibility for herself and find her way and take, you know, move forward in her life. So that's where Kelly is. And so school is happening. And of course, I know that, you know, a lot of conversations have popped up around pods, pandemic pods, learning pods, social pods, and how we're starting to kind of move into the future of education and trying to keep our children engaged in a life that supports their mental health and well-being, but also helps to support their academic development. And like all things, I have mixed feelings about how we're proceeding forward. And we've talked about this on the air the last few months, you know, that there is this opportunity we have to step back and reevaluate what we're doing. But in some ways, when things get shifted, our mental health, you know, kicks us into that fight or flight mode, and the anxiety picks up so high that we're not really functioning in our full bodies. We're in our reptilian mind of just wanting to calm the anxiety. And so I see a lot of reactions culturally, economically, and academically, and in families of making really quick, rash decisions in some attempt to kind of tamp down their own anxiety, but also to return to some sort of normal. And in a way, it's too bad. Because I think that this entire educational system that we are trying to get back to, in some ways, needed a lot of repair. And it's almost like we've been able to shut it down for repairs and have an opportunity to kind of shift how we look at public education moving forward. And I'm a huge fan of public education. Again, if you listen to this show at all, you have heard me say many times that one of the huge benefits of public education is that it helps to create an aware and functioning citizen that unites the country around one common ideal, which is this idea of opportunities and creating communities and creating relationships. And public education at its foundation was really about taking children from all different backgrounds who have immigrated to this country and helping them learn what it was to be a citizen, learn how to raise a family. We taught home economic skills. We taught how to repair small engines. We taught marriage skills. And those have been subsequently removed from our public education system, especially in the last 30 years, when we've moved much more towards a STEM and science-based and actually corporate-based education system, where we've removed all the things that humanize individuals, that help teach them to be in relationship and to develop their social skills and participate in the arts and develop their creativity. We've removed those and gone all in on this idea that what we're really trying to do is create high-performing corporate entities that are going to be able to go out into the workforce and make enough money to buy big homes and jump into this kind of capitalistic hamster wheel that we've all bought onto. And so I have a lot of hesitation in jumping in and saying, yes, let's try to get back to school as soon as possible because that's what's best for kids. Because I don't know if what we were sending them to the last 30 years was really in the best interest of kids. And there's a lot of really amazing people trying to do great things in the best interest of kids. But the whole institution of education is so unwieldy. It's so large and so vast that it's hard to make any real systemic change in education. So we have to do it in small doses, in small batches in different areas. And so this is why academic or learning pods could be such a beneficial thing. If these pods are available to enough children and families to make it helpful. And outside of just getting back to the reading, writing, arithmetic, but actually helping families develop skills for intimacy and community and relationships. Because if anything has become apparent over the course of the pandemic, the last 5 months, is that our greatest weakness as a culture is that we are too individualistic and we do not have collective ties. You know, as a mental health professional who was trained in the early 80s in the land of dysfunctional families, there was a whole generation that was told that your family is toxic and you must run and only be on your own. And now we've got a lot of people who have no social safety net. And that is glaringly obvious. In a time that we need to hunker down, many people don't have access to a family system that could support them. So those are all the things wrapping in my head. And because I would rather hear other people's thoughts on this, I contacted one of my colleagues from Cal Poly, Dr. Carrie Langer. She is a professor in the psychology department with me, and she's also a mom. And we have spent many hours kind of talking about these things pre-pandemic, about raising children and making sure they get what's the best for them. And Carrie has gotten involved with the SLCUSD, the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, Family Pod Formation Group. And I asked Carrie to come on this week and talk about her experiences with forming the group and what her hopes and expectations are. And Carrie introduced me as well to Katie Reginato Cascomo. And Katie is also a mom, but she is the founder of Courageous Steps. She is a speaker and coach and consultant working with healthcare and educational providers to help them improve their interpersonal skills and abilities so that they can work with parents and help empower parents to do better work at home. So today we're going to just see where our conversation takes us around learning pods and what is important for children and for families. And although we won't be opening up the phone lines, we're still kind of in our Zoom way of communicating. You can be part of the conversation in a few ways. You can give us a call at 805-549-8855. And Claire will take your call and pass along your message. Or you can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and I'm happy to respond. You can follow us on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. Follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. My girls do a great job of keeping the Instagram up to date. So if you want to leave a message there or follow the stories or hear what we're talking about, please do. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our show to keep up to date by going to wherever you find your podcast, hit subscribe, and we will be there for your listening convenience. As always, I'm excited to have you here this Tuesday. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to start our show.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I welcome to the show today my guests, Carrie Langer and Katie Reginato Cascomo. And I don't even know where to begin, because I know that you have been working really hard with the Family Pod Formation Group. So I'm just going to throw it to you first, Carrie and Katie. What inspired you to get involved? What is the future of education look right now when it comes to family pods and learning?
Thank you, Elizabeth. I think a lot of the themes you brought up in your intro really connect with where we started. So a lot of parents are really panicking about this fall and online schooling, how we're going to juggle everything. I think a lot of people maybe are having that anxiety response of, what if my child falls behind? And I think it does allow for us to stop in this moment and think about behind what, and to get into some of those issues that you're mentioning about what are the markers that we care about? What are our values, right? As a society, what are we trying to teach our children? And our group is really focused on pods more generally, mostly kind of, I think, from a perspective of social connection and shared support for childcare. We're really trying to foster a sense of community and develop safe and responsible ways for people to connect with one another, support with one another during this time. So if it's helpful, I could kind of start off with maybe a definition of how we're talking about pods, because I think there's a lot of differences out there, yeah, on how people are using the language. So we're looking at pods in a kind of broader, maybe public health sense. So these kind of social groupings that are formed in order to keep risk down during, you know, any kind of infectious disease situation. And so meaning that you would connect with another family, for example, and agree, we're not going to do anything except go out to the grocery store, and we're going to socialize with each other. So our kids can have some social contact, right? But we're kind of reducing our overall risk. And I think people might form pods for a lot of reasons. So sharing childcare while you juggle your work responsibilities. I know for me, the primary goal is socializing opportunities for my children. Many kids have really struggled with not having that social connection and that feeling of community that they missed from their schools. And certainly there are many people who want to figure out how to coordinate the schoolwork piece, right? Maybe my kid's going to be more likely to engage with these online tasks if they're sitting in a park and another kid's sitting 6 feet away and we're kind of doing this at the same time. So I think learning pods are just one type of pod. And I think what's gotten a lot of press are the learning pods that consider bringing a tutor into the mix. So a really extreme example of that would be that guy in the Bay Area who advertised that he wanted to hire his own, I think he's some kind of venture capitalist. He wanted to hire his own fourth or fifth grade teacher and set up a school in his backyard. This is probably the most egregious, right, example of furthering inequities, right? Having that really narrow, I think, tunnel vision of, oh my gosh, what do I do for my child to make sure they're okay? Rather than thinking, you know, what do we do as a community to get through this?
So is your work with SLCUSD, because it's the acronym of the school district, the learning pods that you're looking at trying to create a set outside of the social pods, is it connected to the school district? Is the school talking about, you know, providing the curriculum and the teachers?
No. So that's really an important distinction. And I should say we only mention the district in our Facebook group because we're trying to just focus on families within our own school district right now. We are not officially linked with the school district. And I can't speak for them, but my understanding from having had an informal conversation with someone in the district is that they, for liability reasons, cannot do any of this kind of coordination. And so the parents were doing it ourselves.
And so, Katie, thank you for coming on today. And what inspired you or motivated you to get involved with the family pod formation groups?
When I think about the parents that I know of children my son's age, in fifth grade, many of the parents bring a lot of experience, whether it be professional experience, whether it be teaching experience, whether it be perhaps they are very strong in math, whereas I'm very strong in English. And as we co-create these pods, we're better able to leverage each other's strengths while also being very inclusive and being focused in the renewal and in the regeneration, so that if we do this individually, many, many families are going to be burning out because they are working full time in structures that may not really work with also being a homeschool educator as well. And so how do we collectively co-pod or co-create and care for our children in our community as a whole?
So if we're looking at, I guess, I'm going to try to paint this picture and let's dive into a couple areas. So if you are privileged enough to have access to Facebook to join a group, you have an education or background education as you do, Carrie, as you do, Katie. And so you're able to kind of guide what your children's experiences are. Let's in some ways almost put those families aside, because like in most crises, if you have access to resources, you do well. And so would it be fair to say that even though there's a lot of burnout for professionals who are trying to work full time and take care of their kids, they do have access to creative ways of dealing with this. And so in part of me wants to put that aside and say, enjoy your creative pod forming and your kids are going to be fine. And more than likely, you're going to create neurotic children because you're too focused on them now that they're home full time. And that will be something we deal with later. But then there's the parents who don't have a background in education, who don't have the financial resources to hire a teacher, that they're still counting on the school district to help them come up with a curriculum. I want to talk about that group. And then I want to talk also about people that are so removed from the education system, you know, that they don't even know where to start, that they wouldn't know to clue in with the school district or to ask for resources, to ask for any help at all. How do we address those families? And then the other piece I want to address is, how better could we use the institutional buildings of schools to benefit the people that don't have the privilege or access to resources? Could we talk about re-envisioning the schools the way they did in 1918 during the Spanish flu, where they became community resource centers that served meals to children and families, that had nurses on campus for families, that had educational opportunities, but also had outdoor play and outdoor education, that the schools themselves, instead of just being a holding tank or a training ground for, you know, future Google children, it became more of a community building. So you can jump into any of those that sound interesting, but I kind of want to push aside the people that we already know are going to be okay, and let's address those that might not. Katie.
I think that, go ahead, Katie.
One of the things is, so when we shifted to this online environment, this is a Zoom environment, my son, he cannot do the Zoom messages. Might get 2 to 3 minutes with him on Zoom, but he is not the kind of student that is going to engage. He has ADHD. He is very tactile. He loves to read. But trying to engage him in this Zoom environment is not going to be a productive use of his time or my time or that of my spouse who's actively engaged in his education. In the same spirit, how do we create pods that include a variety of different learning styles, or not even just learning styles, but diversity? People who may, who for a variety of different reasons speak multiple languages, those whose parents may be on the front, may be working in healthcare. Many of our workers and our employees who have traditional jobs. How do we include, how do we create, and this is more of a conceptual idea, how do we create pods that are inclusive of both neurotypical, neurodiverse, racially diverse, variety of different ways of looking at this in a way that's inclusive and creates a meaningful education?
How do we do that, Carrie?
Yeah, so I was going to say, there's certainly a diverse set of perspectives on this, even within our group. But I will say what our group is attempting to do was be an alternative to some of these approaches we were seeing that seemed very academic focused, and that they were going to do exactly what you're saying, which is exacerbate educational inequities, because it would be serving kids who already have very privileged parents, right? And really hyper focused on academic achievement. So what we're attempting to do, and what where this came from, was how can we create pods that are really much more about community connection and support, and about creating these kinds of links for all children, and not so much focused on enrichment or trying to kind of get ahead, but more about how do we stay connected? Because a lot of our kids were suffering during the spring from that lack of connection. So in terms of the folks who are not being reached, I think there's a number of things that our school district is doing well. Of course, there is always more that can be done. But what I saw in the spring that was really, I thought, done very well, my children go to Pacheco Elementary School, so this will be kind of filtered a lot through what I saw from there, but I think some of the efforts were district-wide. First of all, making sure that every child has a Chromebook and then a Wi-Fi hotspot. So obviously, we all come to this situation with different resources, right, where some people have reliable Wi-Fi and a lot of folks don't. The other thing that was very successful was getting the word out about access to food. So many children rely, right, on going into the school system to get their breakfast and their lunch and have those needs met. So I saw a lot of work on the part of the school district to really just make sure those basic needs were being met. In terms of how we're trying to address that issue in terms of the pods, obviously, we're trying to facilitate connection between people. So we have a Google Doc that has a bunch of links in it, because we thought that might be the most accessible thing. Not everyone's on Facebook. you know, not everyone has a laptop, but a lot of people have access to a phone where they can get into a browser, right, and click into that. So we have this Google Doc, which is at tinyurl.com/SLOPodsFAQ. I can say that again at the end for anyone who's interested. And there's a link on there that then brings you to a Google form, which is a place that you can put in your information by answering a list of questions. That data won't be available to all the other parents until August 17th, because we're really trying to do outreach and make sure that as many people can participate as possible, so that people won't just pair off, for instance, with their wealthy neighbor, right? But they'll think more carefully about, say, if it's a mom like me who can work from home, can I pod with a family where the parents, for instance, are essential workers and don't have that flexibility, right? So that we can kind of connect in that way. At any rate, we ask these questions in our form to try to get at some of the issues that you're raising. I'm not claiming that this is perfect, but we have been grappling with these questions. And so there are things in there like, do you need a certain kind of language support? So you may have an immigrant family where the parents are struggling with, let's say, school instruction that's in English. This might not be as much the case at Pacheco, which is truly a bilingual school. Or you might have a parent like myself where I'm trying to learn Spanish right now on Duolingo, and I'm really not very good at it. And my kids are really suffering from not being able to speak Spanish with their peers and their teachers because they're at home. So there may be pods, for instance, where people really want to be in a bilingual pod and kind of exchange that connection. We also ask about people's work flexibility. We ask about kind of their comfort with different kinds of safety precautions. So some people might be looking just to meet up with other kids in the park once a week. Other people might be looking for a more traditional kind of pod, you know, where you make some agreements about what safety kind of behaviors are following, and you connect on that basis.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are Carrie Langer and Katie Reginato Cascomo. They are both part of the SLC-USD Family Pod Formation Group. Carrie reminded me that there are other people that are involved in kind of leading the organization and doing kind of this grassroots effort of building community. And as I said at the top of the show, Carrie and Katie, was this is a great opportunity to step back and evaluate what we were lacking prior to the pandemic, which is basic community social support. That it's interesting that a lot of the focus for people is their children socializing and having people that they can count on as backup if someone gets sick. And is this a beginning of a new way of interacting that you see going beyond just the pandemic?
That
I mean, it's kind of still in theory, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just forming it. But I think what are your long-term hopes?
Great. I mean, I have seen conversations online with parents reflecting on, you know, I always took it for granted that I could chat with other parents on the blacktop at drop-off in the morning. And, you know, I realized this as well, like I had cell phone numbers for only a couple of other parents, right? And there's a lot of people where, you know, maybe for legal reasons, we don't have a school directory. At least maybe I'm just unaware of where to find it, where I can't, you know, look up certain people that I wanted to check in and say hi. So I think it maybe is making us more aware of having wished maybe of that we had reached out more in the past and had more ways of getting in touch. One really nice thing that happened at my children's elementary school is the principal would send his weekly update, just as he always did, but he would have images included of various kids from the school doing various things, so that you still had a little bit of that visual connection. But I think that is why so many people are interested in some type of pod, some type of social connection, so that we can see each other in person, or at least, you know, see a few other folks and maintain that feeling of connection with our schools. Because I do think for many of us, that's maybe our number one way of feeling connected to our community.
And Katie, you had mentioned, you know, because in your work, consulting and working with educators and health professionals, you're probably seeing a lot of burnout and people don't know how to regenerate themselves. So what are you offering to other parents and how are you taking care of yourself?
Well, one of the things is my spouse is an educator and he and I really share, we're pretty equitable in sharing the role of caring for our son. I think in a lot of ways, one of the opportunities from this shift in society is that we're being given an opportunity to rethink how we build organizations. Mm-hmm. What happened when organizations have not necessarily matched or been able to be built in a way where working parents, there shouldn't be a conflict there. Mm-hmm. These are things that need to be developed together with one another. We need to rethink of how we build our businesses. How do we reshift from the traditional 8-to-5 to one where parents and all parents, not just the essential workers, but all people can, well, there isn't that disconnection, where there's more of an integrated, congruent way of being both a professional and a parent.
Well, and it's interesting because we haven't even touched on the academic piece. And so I think we have to touch on that because I understand the social, finding your safety support network of friends that you can kind of count on and rely on. But as when we come back after the break, I want to kind of tap into the education piece because Carrie, you said earlier that a lot of parents get hyper-focused on my child falling behind. And I think the big elephant in the room is we think there is some place we're trying to get to with our children. And I think that place we're trying to get to is part of the reason why so many children struggle with emotional issues and anxiety and depression. And that if we could stop trying to get somewhere with our children and just be where we are, that it might change the whole course of their mental health and well-being, and the economic issues will fall. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guests today are Carrie Langer and Katie Reginato Cascomo, and we're talking about learning pods and family pod formations and pandemic pods, and could this be the wave of the future to heal the community rift and alienation that so many felt before going into the pandemic? You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to continue this conversation.
Before you learn to fly, mama, mama, it ain't no lie. Before you learn to fly, learn how to fall. You got to drift in the breeze before you set your sails. Or it's an occupation where the wind prevails. Before you set your sails, drift in the breeze. Since the world began, everybody got the runs for glory. Nobody stopped and scrutinized the plan. Nobody stopped.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we are talking about the emergence of pods in every form, from a learning pod to a social pod to a pandemic support group pod. And we talked a bit about the social pods that, Carrie, you have been looking at for your children. Because as I said before, you've got the education piece handled. You have the capacity and the ability to share that. But the social piece, you were looking for more. But let's talk about the families who are concerned about the education piece. And as Katie mentioned, you know, her son didn't do well with Zoom. And I'm sad that Zoom seems to be our fallback way we're going to teach children. Wouldn't it be better to just send home packets and say, take your kids outside and get through this and they'll be fine, but then spend the rest of the time just letting them run and go free? What am I missing?
I completely agree with that. And I was actually going to mention some ideas that I've seen in the mix from friends who are professors of education, folks who work in the school district, that we really be careful to think about the professionals who understand the academic side of things, so our teachers. So I would say that I am well qualified to teach college students, and I think do a very good job of that. I am not well qualified to teach a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, specifically when they're my children and they doubt most things that I say, right?
Good point.
I think, yeah, most of us can relate to, if I just have another mom ask them to do that, they'll do it, right? If the teacher tells them, it's completely different. Not to mention, you know, I'm joking around, but that the expertise, right, for teaching at that developmental level, that's what our teachers hold. So I think that's one reason that many people are very suspicious of certain kinds of learning pods. And that's where I think it's really important to distinguish what type of pod are you trying to form. When you bring on a tutor in the traditional sense, so someone who is going to be doing direct teaching, introducing new curriculum to the student, that's really problematic from an equity perspective, right, in terms of your child getting enrichment, so to speak, right, that other children don't have access to. It's also really problematic in terms of how we think about respecting our teachers' expertise. So our group is really focused on how do we share resources with one another? How do we connect and support one another so that our kids can engage to their best ability with the curriculum that their teachers are providing? Okay. There is another group of parents that are organizing therefore safe and equitable schooling. And they were very focused on making science-based decisions, right, about whether or not to go back in person in the fall. And there's a lot of folks in that group right now that are pushing the school district to be as flexible as possible in terms of how much synchronous, meaning being live on Zoom together with your teacher at the same time is going to be required, because for many folks, this is a burden to do that kind of synchronous Zoom interaction. I know for families where you have two working parents, the idea that you would have to follow a specific time to do schoolwork during the 9 to 5 hours is very difficult. I also have a child who has different kinds of learning needs and was not able to learn via Zoom. There are many children, I think, who fall into that category. So there's a lot of parents pushing right now for, we want to be able to pick up physical books, physical worksheets, right, and just do this kind of tactile kind of learning that would be done in the classroom, right? As Devin Kuhn-Choin is one of our other admins on the group, a parent, and she had mentioned, you know, for her child trying to do an online picture of a penguin during her math worksheet took up almost all of her time, as opposed to if she had the paper and pencil, right? She could freely draw and be dealing with those math concepts. So I think a lot of parents are really desiring that we step back from the computers and have that flexibility, because obviously there are many parents who do want that daily kind of face-to-face for their kid with their teacher. But I think this is the challenge for the school district, right, is you have such a diversity of needs out there. I just don't want to see families that are already struggling. So for instance, kids with disabilities, dual kind of working parents, low-income parents who can't afford childcare to facilitate this, that they're not further stressed, right? That you have to be online with your child at 10 a.m., right? Or you're going to be penalized. I think that's a stress-inducing thought for a lot of us.
So for the families, again, because I keep kind of going back to, I don't worry as much for the kids whose parents have the capacity to make accommodations for them. But what about the kids whose parents have relied on schools to be their childcare provider? Mm-hmm. And what do we do with that? And how do we help alleviate the anxiety? And maybe you and I differ on this, Carrie, but part of me feels like, you know, if kids miss an academic year, you know, of being in the classroom, what are they really falling behind from what would be more important, providing for these kids an opportunity to be, you know, outdoors and be with their parents? Or do we want their parents so stressed and hammering them, they have to learn that the kids end up hate learning, the parents hate the kids, we have a rise in, you know, abuse in homes. Like, in some ways, I'm saying, can't we pause it?
Or I guess I think that we probably agree on this. Just personally, okay. I lean towards, okay, so one of my fears just personally as a parent was that my child who has a disability, I already have to do a lot of advocacy for that child to make sure that she has the access that she deserves to learn to her potential. And the spring was a disaster for her. And my perspective, also being someone who had to learn to teach online in the spring, was that let's just wait and see, because that was emergency learning. And I kind of just stood back, and luckily her teacher was very, very motivated and flexible as well. And we just kind of were like, let's figure out the bare minimum, just get through this, right? But I would say that we all need to kind of keep reminding ourselves that we are all going through this pandemic together, right? And so where we are all going to be behind, I don't even know what we're comparing to, right? Because the entire nation is under a pandemic. I think the real risks are for children who were already vulnerable. So when we think about people falling behind, I completely agree. We don't need to worry about the children from high-income families with parents with professional degrees. They already have those privileges, right, and that those kind of doors that are going to open for them. I think we really need to think about what can we be doing as a community to support one another in addition to what the district can do. And I think the district is talking about those things currently. But it's really the kids who are English learners, kids coming from low-income families, kids with learning disabilities who are not able to work one-on-one with the paraprofessional that they may have been working with right prior in the classroom. Those are the kids where I think we really need to put our effort to figure out not how to have them meet some arbitrary line, but how to make sure they have access to be connected to their peers, connected in some way to their teacher, and the enjoyment of learning, right? That they have the same access that maybe is pretty easy, I guess, for more privileged children to access.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to my guest, Dr. Carrie Langer. And we haven't heard from Katie on this perspective, but before we jump to Katie, we have a call. And Sarah, who are we hearing from today?
We heard from Janine. She's listening in Lockwood. She called into our 805-549-8855 number. She's been hearing a lot about and seeing a lot about online some information about outdoor schools. She says it seems that in our mild California climate that this could be a good alternative, and she's wondering if any of you have been hearing about this possibility or discussing the possibility with your peers about outdoor schooling.
Thank you, Janine. Thanks for listening out in Lockwood. Katie, what about outdoor education?
I first learned about outdoor education probably about 5 or 6 years ago. My son was in preschool. I loved the idea of it. I love the idea of the tangible, the hands-on type of learning for the way my son learns. As I went to go look for those type of outdoor schools, they didn't exist yet here, not at the level of that would have engaged him or other students with his learning style. Is this an opportunity that we could use to help create a pod or create an outdoor school so this will become something that is more actively utilized in our community, because we do have the beautiful weather. We do have these incredible opportunities. This may be a way to begin thinking about that organizational development and make that part of our educational future.
Well, in a lot of our education, and Katie mentioned before, off the air is that it's designed around our traditional work schedule. So from 8 to 5 or 9 to 3, we have kids in school. So parents can go to work during that time. But, and I don't know this, so I'm just throwing it out there, but how much time do children really need to be doing the academic piece every day? Because my guess is it's about 1.5 to 2 hours at the most, to kind of get a little reading in, get a little math in, you know, to work on those skills. But the rest of their day really should be outdoors, engaging with nature, you know, the natural exploration that you learn from doing science experiments outside. You know, this I think is something that we haven't addressed because we're still trying to box children's education to fit our work schedules, but our work now conflicts if kids can't leave home to go to school. So I think if we really understood how much time academically children need, that would take a lot of pressure off parents, because if you knew, look, you really just need to spend 1.5, 2 hours a day, and you can do it anytime during the day, but then the rest of the day, keep them engaged in an outdoor pod group or doing this activity. I wonder how that would change parents' sense of burnout thinking about an 8-hour school day.
Definitely. There's been a lot of really interesting sharing from people who homeschool, sort of putting out tips on social media for, hey, here's something you might want to hear about my transition, right, from kind of traditional school to homeschooling. And one of the main things I've seen people mention is that it's a much shorter amount of time spent on academic subject matter because it's one child, right, working through. And so you're not necessarily engaged in some of more of those kind of broader classroom management activities. A teacher who has 28 students, let's say, it's a much different situation, right? And so I think many homeschooling parents would probably agree with you on that. My experience in the spring was certainly that we did not spend from 8:30 to 2:30 on schoolwork because we couldn't. Both my spouse and I were working full-time jobs, and my children just also did not have the kind of self-regulation, right, to be doing many of those activities on their own. In terms of really thinking about how to use those outdoor spaces, I know a number of parents had really asked the district about that. I personally can't really speak to what the constraints are, you know, that the district would have to contend with to make that happen. I get the sense that a lot of this is just difficult because of the timeline, right? They have to consult with the teachers' union in terms of what would actually work with their contracts. They're having to kind of integrate information from public health department and do all of this very quickly. But I do think in terms of our pods, it does open up a lot of flexibility, right? So families who aren't comfortable, for instance, meeting indoors, can have the option, right, of meeting in a playground, wearing masks or doing 6-foot distancing and still get a bit of that social contact.
I think that, again, looking outside of the traditional ways we do things, the learning pods, I love the flexibility and opportunity. But now for people who don't have access to pods, or you're an essential worker where you are leaving your house, you're not working from home, that has own stretchers. You know, in Houston, Texas, the YMCA in Houston, Texas, the largest YMCA in the country, they have been working full-time offering programs since this started and incredibly successfully, not any transmission rates. And they have kids doing 1 to 2 hours a day of academics, and then they're out playing sports, going on trips. And Boys and Girls Club also in Texas and some of the bigger, you know, I think that if for people who don't have the privilege of setting up a pod, that going to some of these other organizations outside the school district, and again, I support our educators and the profession of education, but it is such a behemoth bureaucracy that is not going to quickly adapt like the YMCA and Boys and Girls Clubs. And we really should be focusing and talking about, you know, how those organizations have already pivoted and are meeting the needs of families and children. Katie.
My son's been involved with the YMCA for over about 6 years now. One of the greatest losses we experienced is to those relationships that were built at the YMCA. It is his favorite place to be. We have just an incredible YMCA here where hopefully on the list for fall of 2020. How do we use this as an opportunity to restructure not just our education system, but our workforce? We need to be reaching out to our Chamber of Commerce's and inviting businesses and corporations and organizational leaders of all kinds to work with parents by not just adjusting their schedule, but by reshaping our value system as business owners, as organizations, to create more of a congruency mm-hmm. between parents who work and also caring for our children as well.
Go ahead, Carrie.
I just wanted to clarify one thing from what you just mentioned, Elizabeth, that our hope is that these pods would be available and alleviate some of this stress for families who are not high-income families. So the hope is to share resources. So if you have parents who have flexible work schedules, for instance, that they can connect with parents, for instance, who can only do childcare on the weekend. I think one challenge that has been highlighted is that we have never had enough childcare in this county. Almost all of us, I think, who have children can relate to the struggle to get into a preschool, for instance, mm-hmm. That would cover the hours one needs for working. And I'm hearing from parents that they're getting on these wait lists. And I know the district is really trying hard to work on this. And there were some informational meetings. But my sense is there's not enough care out there to meet the need. And I think that's an ongoing issue that's only been made worse, right, in the current situation.
You're exactly right. Because prior to the pandemic, I know that the Child Care Coalition of San Luis Obispo had gone up in front of the Board of Supervisors on multiple occasions, begging them to loosen some of the zoning for child care facilities so that we could have enough. We have enough providers. We don't have zoned areas where the providers can offer care. So you're right that this is highlighting the areas where we were weak as a community prior to the pandemic. And as Katie mentioned, you know, having organizations, having businesses reevaluate what they're asking of their employees and their time frame. And then the schools, and I think the schools are adapting and will get more creative. But I also love that the pods are providing, you know, when I was a child, my mom moved to California and knew no one. And she immediately joined a parent co-op. And that was saved her life because they had this very formalized structure where you earned points by taking care of other people's kids. And then you could use your points as someone watch your child and they exchange food and time. And I don't know where the co-ops went, but that was the social community support of my mom's entire life here. It became her social network and the friends we grew up with. And so I think that's my hopefulness for the mental health and well-being, primarily to look at that almost above the academic part, but to build on these needs to have community. Because when something happens, it's a crisis, we all need to have some place to turn.
Yes. I love your description of it. And I think that's my dream as well. And there are obviously a lot of conflicting opinions on how to do that. We've encountered a lot of hurdles of how do you figure that out in a pandemic, right? There's so many difficulties there in terms of what can we create that will not put people at higher risk, that will be inclusive. There's a lot of disagreement around that, but I will say that I feel like that was another area where you could identify some weakness pre-pandemic, and we have this opportunity to try to create new ways of connecting, right, in this stressful moment. And for me as a working mom, having a child with a developmental disorder, I have felt very isolated as a mom. And I don't think it is because people don't mean well. I think we do, but the way that our neighborhoods are organized, the limited, I think, ways in which we can share our care really affects the mental well-being of our parents.
So Katie, then, because you work with the mental health and well-being of educators and healthcare providers, what do you see coming up in the next few months as we get back to school? What are your solutions for your family and for the people you work with?
I think we need to rethink how we structure our organizations. We need to think more equitably. We need to think more congruently. Instead of, say, an organizational leader saying, you are a parent, I'm only going to give you partial amount of the work, or I'm going to decrease your workload, it's restructuring all of our employees, all of our human resources, to be something where parents are, not just parents, but all people are able to co-create new ways of doing work. In addition to that, something came out of, I believe it was Sweden, probably 5 years ago, where they've decreased their work hours to 6-hour days. So now more people can work. So they'll have the morning shift and the afternoon shift. It creates a more equitable opportunity for more people to be employed. While we have a low rate of unemployment, there's questions on whether that is accurate.
Well, and then if we get to the bigger picture, if we're talking about Sweden and some of the areas, if we had universal health care and people didn't have to worry about, you know, working to pay for health care, how many people wouldn't work a 9-to-5 job? They might do something entrepreneurial. And if kids can learn all of their academic lessons in 2 hours, if I can get all my work done in 4, why am I sitting there for 8 hours? So I think that's what you're bringing up, Katie, right? Is that not just looking at one aspect of society, but this whole kind of draconian way that we've looked at work and child rearing from this very industrial perspective. Carrie, last thoughts about this?
Yeah, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss this. It's really such an important topic. And I wanted to put a shout out to all of the folks listening to please spread the word about this pod formation group. We really want as many people to participate as possible so that as many people have possible connections. And the website that you can go to, it's a Google Doc that has all the links, is tinyurl.com/SLO pods FAQ. And you can also reach out to me, Carrie Langner, or Katie Reginato Cascamo, or our other admins from the group, Devin Kuhn Choi, Michelle Castillo, Aaron Muschetti. And one last plug is that there's a bill in the state legislature right now, AB 1460, that is for ethnic studies in the K-12. And I think it would be great if as many as possible can support that so that we can make some major structural change to the way that we approach learning in our public schools.
I'm glad you brought that up, Carrie, because that means I want to invite you back because I want to talk about decolonizing the education system that we have. When we do get back to traditional schools, it's a time to have all those conversations. Yeah. And Katie, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and being with me this week. If I'm assuming for people who aren't in the school district, if you Google learning pods in any form, things are going to pop up for you. They're in every school district, every area right now. It just takes a little bit of reaching out. And if you have a question, you can always email me to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I will try to connect you with Carrie and Katie's group or with a group in your area to help you get started. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And as always, I appreciate you supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I will be back next Tuesday at 2.
Well, it started out